We have a couple more from the archives tonight. The first one is A Prison Diary by Jeffrey Archer. I listened to this on audiobook, unabridged, of course. Synopsis. Jeffrey Archer, a member of the British House of Lords and a successful novelist, wrote a prison diary to recount his 3 weeks in a maximum security prison ward while awaiting transfer to his final destination for a 4-year minimum security sentence for perjury. Life in the maximum security ward was interesting, and Archer doesn't spare the audience the details of why so many men end up in prison for life for murder. At times he's incredibly bitter towards those who put him in jail to begin with, but he never once claims that he's innocent of perjury, only that others are far more guilty than he. Opinion. The good. Archer is a very good storyteller. He blends sparse log-entry sections with detailed stories told by the inmates or of his own experiences. Clearly he received some special treatment, if not by the guards, then by his fellow inmates, but he approaches the conditions of prison life with some humor and a great deal of gentleness and compassion. The bad. Some people feel that Archer got exactly what he deserved, and that his political viewpoints are too prevalent in this book. I don't entirely agree. He's highly critical of the prison reform system in England, and he has a certain amount of rancor that he directs to a certain high-ranking secretary. But he's a career politician. He's expected to bring his politics into his prison, and I'd have been disappointed if he didn't. The ugly. I don't know how it is in Great Britain, but in America, new inmates are often raped, usually early. Sex, except as it occurs in an inmate's distant past, is not dealt with in this book. The gap leaves me wondering, is Britain's prison system so much kinder than America's that inmates don't sexually assault other inmates? This seems unlikely, especially given the privileged position some of them have over others. I wonder, too, if some of the threat of violence that Archer alludes to isn't maybe sexual violence. Finally, other prison accounts I've read mention masturbation practices, yet Archer is strangely silent on this practice, too. Do British inmates not jack off, or are they more polite about discussing it? Grade, A-. Highly recommended, well-written, or such great ideas you just can't resist. Our next one in the archives is The Gates of the Alamo, by Stephen Harrigan. Synopsis. The lives of three people are irrevocably changed during the political upheaval of the Alamo and Texas independence. Opinion. The good. By focusing on the three main fictional characters, Harrigan managed to bring to life his version of the Alamo Battle without turning a historical novel into an historical account. I cared about Mary and her son Trevor and a traveling scholar. I wept at the end. I wanted them all to get through it all okay. Harrigan did an excellent job with characterization, and he portrayed both sides of the fight fairly. He did not hesitate to show the brutality of the Texas forces, nor the compassionate side of the Mexicans, even though the bulk of the story is a tale of resistance against Mexican rule. The bad. I had hoped to get a more of a history lesson out of this, but I'm glad that certain things were left a little vague. It's now up to me to read more and find out if the events of the Alamo really happened that way or not. The ugly. The story starts with Mary's son as an elderly man and a respected member of his community. It ends the same way, his waning years having spent a little spell remembering the events of the past. Thus, everything is told in flashback, but it's flashback that Trevor would not have known all the details of. What's more, the foreknowledge that Trevor survived the Alamo pulls the tension when he's actually in the battle and at risk, because we know that he will make it through and survive just fine. I didn't feel that the flashback framing added anything to the story. It could have been left out without any loss in storytelling or impact. Grade, B+. Strong recommendation, well written, with some flaws or predictability that make it a little less fun to read. And our third one from the archives is one of my very favorite books, Life of Pi, by Jan Martel. I have to preface this review by telling you that after almost 2 years later, I am still very fond of this book. It stands out in my mind as a great one. Synopsis. Pai Patel is a teenager when his zookeeping family emigrates from India to Canada by boat. During the course of their journey, the ship goes down, killing everyone on board and stranding Pai in a lifeboat with a zebra, an orangutan, a hyena, a rat, and a 450-pound adult male tiger. The book is an account of how Pai grew up in India, and how he made the amazing voyage over the sea with a tiger, the last survival of the animal contingent, until landing in Mexico. Opinion. The good. Everything is good about this book. I listened to it as an Audible.com download, but eventually purchased it in print as well. One of the beautiful things in this novel is the use of many different exposition styles to tell the tale. For example, there are long passages of pure description, rich narration, comprehensive comparison and contrast essays, and even long, beautifully written process passages, such as how to cohabitate with a Bengal tiger on a 20-foot lifeboat. There is humor and great tragedy. The first third or so is spent on Pi's childhood growing up as a zookeeper's son who is also deeply religious. Early in the novel, we are introduced to the fact that Pi graduated from the University of Toronto with a double degree in zoology and religion, so it's no wonder that his story is filled with observations from the natural world as well as deeply religious revelations. These two perspectives set up a background that the reader will desperately need when the crisis of the novel comes to pass. Pi trapped in a lifeboat with a tiger. And what an amazing crisis it is, too. At the end of the novel, the truth of Pi's story is challenged by representatives of the official way of things. My words, not Martel's. In response, he tells a different story, one more plausible, but far more heartbreaking, far less wonderful. While I listened to the novel, I had to pause at that point. Which version did I believe? Which one did I want to believe? I wanted to believe the tiger story because it was so much more beautiful, and here I found that the greatest weakness of the story had meaning. The bad. The weakness I found was early on. Pi is a deeply religious boy. In fact, so much so it causes conflicts, as he attends Hindu temple, prays at the mosque, and attends Christian services. He decides that he wishes to be all three, Hindu, Christian, and Muslim, and defends this choice by declaring, "But I just want to love God." But Pi is highly critical of atheists, and that balked me, because I am an atheist. Pi's criticism is that he cannot understand why someone would choose to disbelieve the beautiful story. I didn't understand why that line was actually a strength, of course, until I came to the very end of the novel. The ugly. There's a lot of ugliness in this novel. There's brutality and a kind of indifferent animalism that many animal stories lack, a conscious acceptance that no matter what, a wild animal is always going to be wild. There's also quite a lot of graphic violence in the novel. If you are at all squeamish, you might have trouble finishing it. For all that, though, the story is well written, and there is nothing gratuitous about the violence or the brutality. It is very matter-of-fact storytelling. Grade A+, highly recommended, well written, with such great ideas and such great storytelling. You just can't resist this one.